We're starting a new section here. That is to say, we've spent the first 5 weeks of the course on this one chapter in the first part of Dynamics of Time and Space. And now we are turning to the fourth section of Dynamics in Time and Space. But actually, the two are very closely related. The way dynamics is set up is that part four is a kind of manual, you could say, although that's a little misleading, but it's a manual for the rest of the book. And so the first part of part four, which is what we're reading from now, relates to the first part, and in particular, this section that we're going to be working with for the rest of the program relates to thoughts. That's not all it relates to, but that's what we're mainly going to focus on, is thoughts. So, is that somebody saying something? It's David, but he's not maybe speaking to us. Okay. So, this week, as most of the time now, we've been doing very short readings, which gives us a chance to go into things, I think, in some detail. So I want to start with the first paragraph on page 245, actually the first two paragraphs. And I want to go through those for a little bit in terms of how we can really, what kind of guidance they offer us for how we could investigate the question of the relationship between thoughts and experience, because that's really where we're looking, I think. And then in the third paragraph, there's a kind of a practice introduced. So when we get to that, I want to do the practice and give us a chance to comment or reflect on our experience with the practice. So that's what we're going to do over the next few minutes. Okay, so let's take a look at this first paragraph. The first sentence says, as human beings, we have a wealth of experience that we can draw on to activate knowledge. Okay, so we have experience. Yet often we seem to ignore experience in favor of the surface contents of our thoughts, the identities disclosed to the senses, and other structures we impose on what arises. So the model here is that we have two different possibilities. We have experience, and there's knowledge available through experience, and we have thoughts. Now, Rinpoche doesn't say just thoughts. He says three things. He says thoughts, identities, and imposed structures. Right? But I think for our purposes, and maybe even more broadly, you could say that all of those are kind of variations on the notion that the world that we ordinarily inhabit is a thought-out world. So there are thoughts in the sense that we usually think of thoughts. The surface content of what it is we're thinking about. And then there are thoughts in the form of identity. So even though we're not thinking in the kind of regular way we have, of, you know, the kind of usual understanding, we have we are identifying what it is that we're experiencing. And the very fact of identifying, even the very fact of naming something or putting a label on it, is in fact a kind of thought. So that's the second alternative. And then the third is kind of a catch-all, other structures we impose on what arises. And I think it's fair to say that, or at least one way of looking at what's being pointed at there, is that in a situation, the situation has a structure. So here we are in a class. You know, here I am speaking. Here it is Sunday morning. We're not actually having those labels or not making those identifications, and we're certainly not thinking about it, but it's an underlying structure. And I think, again, you could say That is a form of thinking. We think we know what's going on. That's actually a nice phrasing when we say that. If we say, I think I understand what's happening here, that's a kind of a global perspective. And that global perspective is what's being pointed at here. So here are these three ways in which thought is being opposed to experience. And the suggestion, as I said, is being made that the world we inhabit, and it's tempting to say the world we experience, but then we'd lose the distinction. So I'm saying the world we inhabit is a thought-out world. It's not, there's something missing. There's an immediacy missing. We're on the surface. We're on the surface. Okay. And in the beginning of the second paragraph, Rinpoche kind of summarizes that. He says, we have a preference for the presupposed, which I think is just a nice phrase. I mean, I just like the language of it. But the point is that whatever comes up, you could say in every moment experience is fresh. And when we work with time, that becomes a very important theme. But for us right now, we can just say, in every moment, experience is fresh, but we don't go to that freshness. Instead, we have a preference for the presupposed. We have a preference for what's already been thought out, what's already been labeled, what's already been structured. We have all of those different words to describe this, and I think that's what Rinpoche is pointing out. And then he says, okay, beneath this preference for the presupposed, there's a strong tension or fear, right? It's not so clearly spelled out in this paragraph. I mean, it's only one paragraph after all. But Rinpoche certainly talks about this in other places. And the sense here is that really the fear, the tension, is that we know that we're imposing a structure. We know that we're not really in contact with experience. And there's this kind of underlying concern that if we did contact experience, we might lose not only the identity of the things that we engage, not only our sense of the way things are, this world that we inhabit, but even our own identity. So that's the claim that's being made here. The evidence would have to do more with discovering that tension that he describes, the tension, the fear, the restlessness. We stay on the surface because we're afraid that there's nothing underneath the surface. So those two paragraphs together seem to me to suggest three possible ways in which you could practice. And one of the, I don't know, one of the games you can play with the TSK books, but it's not really a game, it's actually a very fruitful thing to do, is when you're reading, even in a single paragraph, to say to yourself, well, how could I practice with this? What could that, how would that, how could I investigate it experientially? That's maybe a better way to say it. So it seems like there's three possibilities, right? One is to see, can we actually discover in our experience that we are on the surface of experience, that we are caught up in the presupposed or caught up in thought and identity and imposed structures? And that is more or less what we've been focusing on. And the reason for that is it seems to me pretty accessible as you begin to understand what it is that Rinpoche is pointing at and as you work with it. There is something there that is really, you can touch it, you can contact it. The second possibility for practice that's suggested here, and it's pretty closely related, it has to do with this idea that we encounter each moment of experience in terms of what we presuppose. And the question would be to look at the presupposed. So as each moment arises, to look and see what is it that how do we shape it? How do we turn it into what we already know to be the case? And that would be a particular form of inquiry, and it's a very good form of inquiry. If we were in a retreat situation, we could work with that one too. And on your own, you're certainly welcome to work with it. We're not going to focus on it right now. I'm just pointing it out. And then the third comes from this notion that I already mentioned a moment ago, when he says that there's this strong tension or fear operating, right? Which manifests as a kind of a restlessness. And so you could look for that in your own experience. So all three of those alternatives are available and are presented in those first couple of paragraphs. Now, we're going to look mostly at the first one, which is where we have been looking, and the next paragraph sets that up. So I'm going to take, a couple more minutes to set this up, to lay the groundwork, and then we'll do the practice. So that's our that that's my intention. So he lays out these three things that are going on that we've just been talking about, and then he says, as a counter to this view. So he's really saying, well, what if we don't like that? What if we don't think that's satisfying? What if we would like to consider an alternative? He says, here's a way to do it. Here's a counter. Here's another approach. Consider the possibility that there is nothing to disappear. So he's saying this in terms of the preceding paragraph. We're concerned that we have this established identity, we have a way things are, and we have a little suspicion, you could say, that it's not established, that it's not substantive, and that if we look at it too closely, too deeply, it will disappear. And then, we will collapse into chaos. We will collapse into the abyss. That's kind of the idea. And he says, well, okay, the alternative is to say, what if there's nothing to disappear? What if there is no substance? There is no identity? There's only the naming. There's only the labeling. There's only the identifying. There's only the thinking. And that's a theme that we've been exploring throughout this program. And then he makes a very important point. He says, this is not a claim about existence or non-existence. In other words, he's not saying everything you think is real doesn't really exist. He's just saying everything that you think is real only exists, at least this is the alternative we're exploring, everything you think is real only exists as a construct, as a thought, as a label that we are applying. Right? So he says this is not a claim about existence or non-existence, but an observation about the way we structure experience. So the point here is, and this is really, really central, it's not that we want to figure out some clever trick. I probably shouldn't say it so negatively, but it's not that we want to figure out some way to, kind of look at what we think is reality and somehow, tear the mask off and show that there's nothing there underneath. Because it's very difficult to do that. I mean, maybe we could discuss in what sense it's difficult, but that's a real problem. Well, one way in which it's difficult is that when you tear off the mask to expose something underneath, then, that's another mask. That's another label that you put on. So that's problematic. See, that's not what he says. He's saying what we want to look at is an observation about the way we structure experience. So we're interested in the structuring, the labeling, not the content, but the thinking, the naming, the identifying. And again, these are themes that we've been talking about quite regularly. Okay. The more clearly we see how appearance is dictated by thought, the more we realize that on the other side of that dictation, or perhaps within it, there's nothing doing the dictating. The expression itself carries its own message, the communique communicates itself forward. And then in the last paragraph of the reading, the first paragraph on page 246, he basically says, that's not a conceptual insight. That's not something we're supposed to agree to and say, oh, now I get it. It's meant to be an experiential insight. Okay, now, there's a kind of a dilemma here. It's not a dilemma that needs to concern us, but we need to clarify it. I mean, we need to clarify why it doesn't concern us. But first, we have to identify it. So here's the dilemma. The dilemma is that in the beginning, in the first paragraph, Rinpoche says he sets up this dichotomy between experience and this kind of surface level of thinking and identities and structures that we impose. But if you look at what he says in the next paragraphs, it seems like he's saying wherever we turn, whatever direction we look in, as soon as we look at experience, we are going to do so in terms of labels and identities and thoughts and an imposed structure. And he doesn't say that in so many words, but it's kind of the example I just gave. If you tear off the mask to reveal what's underneath, that too is a mask, right? Inherent in any moment of experience is a kind of is this naming and labeling and identifying. Now you might disagree with that, and a lot of traditions do, and you might make it your practice or your form of inquiry to try to just go beneath all labels, abandon all labels. But that's not exactly what we're doing. He's just saying we need to recognize that underneath the appearance is nothing in particular. There's just appearance. There's nothing to disappear, as he says. So there is the appearance, and that's it. And the appearance is structured by thoughts and by labels and identities. And all of that is appearance. And not the appearance of something. It's just appearance. It's not, the world that we inhabit is not a substantive world. Now that doesn't mean, and he talks about this in that last paragraph on page 245, that doesn't mean that it's an unreal world. It just means that the realness that we count on, which is perfectly, it's a valid distinction to say this is real and this is not, but the thing that is real is still just a particular form of appearance. That's a very, I think we've been exploring this, so I think that's fairly clear. But if people have questions and comments about it, by all means, speak up or type away. We are going to go into it in practice in a moment, but anything before we do that? Okay. Well, then, let's see. Let me try to put this in a way that is most fruitful. What that suggests, where that leads us, is that if we want to look at our experience without making it substantive, we have to see thoughts in their arising. We have to see the labeling, the presupposing, and all of that. Okay, so Tina has asked the question. He's not saying that our world is not real. That's right. He's just saying that real is not what we think it is. Right? Yeah, and so it's not a kind of idealism. I'm just looking at what Tina's commenting. When I look at a tree, it's not that I think it into existence. You could say a lot about that question because, in a sense, the one who's looking and the tree that you see, they arise together, and that's interesting. But okay, Tina, you seem satisfied with that, so we'll move on. The question is, how can you see appearance as simply appearance without anything else? Without any substance to it, right? Well, you need to see that as thoughts arise, that they're just thoughts, that they're just the outcome of thinking. Okay. So let's go back. So Linda asks a couple of questions, or asks the same question twice. I don't know why it shows up twice on the chat. So if somebody really saw this clearly, you say an enlightened mind, but let's use TSK talk here. Would you see it disappearing, meaning not appearing as solid at the same time? Yeah, I think that's exactly it. As it appears, you recognize that it's simply appearance appearing rather than a label that we assign to something solid underneath. In a sense, the point is that that's not some great insight that an enlightened being can have. It's just a kind of a flip we can make. It's just like turning things on edge. That's Rinpoche uses that image in one of the books. He says, what if you could turn experience on edge? In other words, see it from a different perspective, basically. And this is a different perspective. This is the perspective that says appearance is simply its own appearing. It's not the appearance of something. There's nothing to disappear, just all appearance. So, how can you see appearing as appearing? Do you have to be situated somewhere else? Because if you do, then it seems like we've got a problem because, you have to be situated in something real that is not appearing in order to see appearing as appearing. And that wouldn't be right. That doesn't make any sense in terms of what we've been presenting. So the alternative is to see appearing within appearing, that is, in the very act of appearing, you're aware of the appearing. And question is, how do you do that? So one possibility, and this actually, at around this time in a program, I always start thinking a little about the next program. Our next program is going to be about sensing, about the senses. And so one possibility would be to say, well, you can go to a dimension of your experience which does not catch you up so much in labels, or which lets you experience in a kind of unformulated way. It's a different dimension of experience. So, it's like biting into an apple, and there's the taste of the apple, and yes, there's the labeling that comes up next after that, or immediately, some sort of judgment or appreciation, whatever it is. But there's also kind of the immediacy of what I was just calling unformulated experience. That's one way to do it. And we will look at that more next quarter. That's where I was starting to go with that. When you do that, you have to be kind of careful that you don't turn that immediate experience into another substance. And that would be the kind of warning, speaking in terms of what we're talking about right now. You say, wherever you go, whatever level you get to, there's still this appearing activity and nothing else, really. And even the richness of experience is itself an appearing. That's where I'm trying to to point us. So what do you do instead? Or it's not really an instead, but what is the approach that we can take? Well, the approach is not so much to look for a hidden dimension in experience. That's kind of the, you know, let's tune in to the actual taste of apple instead of the presupposition that we already know what it's like to taste an apple. That's a good practice, but that's not exactly what we're going to do. The alternative is to look for the appearing as a doing. And I don't want to try to formulate a lot of different words to point to that. I think we have a perfectly good place to look. That's not in the reading, but we're going to get to it in, because we're moving very deliberately here, very slowly. We're going to get to it in a couple of weeks, but we can anticipate. It's in exercise one, which is on page 247. And it's just, I'm just going to have us work for the next few minutes now with the first sentence of exercise one. In a couple of weeks, we'll read the commentary to exercise one and go into it more in that sense. But right now, just the first sentence. He says, as thoughts and sensations come up, so whatever arises, you know, we don't go in the direction of the presupposed. As thoughts and sensations come up, look within each arising moment, right? Not the label, not the identity. Look within each arising moment for the quality of awareness it carries. And that's it. That's the language I want to have us use. Yes, there is an experience. Yes, there is content to that experience. Yes, there is a label. Yes, you operate on the basis of a presupposed construct. But at the same time, or kind of fundamental to all of that, is the awareness that makes that possible. The quality of the awareness. And so the instruction here is, whatever it is that arises, rather than looking at the content, not throwing the content away, because then there's nothing to look at, but whatever arises, look within the experience for the quality of awareness, for the quality of that particular awareness. Let me go back and look again. Sometimes I want to be sure to do it in the way that it says. Yeah. Look within each arising moment for the quality of awareness it carries. That is, in the moment, there's a quality of awareness. That's what you want to look at. So, Rinpoche says at the beginning of the commentary, he says, don't worry if you're not quite sure what the heck that you're supposed to do. Let's just try to do it anyway. Look within each moment as it arises for the quality of awareness that it carries. So, let's take 5 minutes or so, maybe a little more, to do that, and then we'll have a little time for discussion. Okay? Okay, I'm going to start up again. For some reason, my camera's not working. I don't know why. So you won't get to see my face for the next few minutes. But I assume everybody can still hear me. It looks like everybody can still hear me. Or at least I can see Tina can because I see her face. Okay. So what seemed interesting or puzzling or worth discussing. Okay, I see a comment from Linda about that immediately. So let's go to that. So Linda says, looking at the quality of awareness underlying the construct, I keep encountering a layer of emotion which has the color of fear and a kind of aggressiveness, or maybe a better word is willfulness. It feels like if I poke it with a pin, it might all unravel. However, there's no hand to hold a pin. Well, the unraveling, the what needs to be unraveled, presumably doesn't really need to unravel because it hasn't been put together. That's sort of what we get out of what we've seen. But it's interesting. I mean, that you're describing something that seems quite similar to what Rinpoche describes when he talks about that quality of tension. You said you say it has a kind of an aggressive quality to it. That's very interesting. I don't have anything else in particular to say about that. Maybe someone else would like to comment, or let's just open it up. Who else would like to say something? Or chat. Okay, well, I'm going to say something.
How refreshing concept.
Oh, okay, go ahead. Is this? Hello?
Michael?
Yeah, hi, Michael.
Yeah, I was just going to say it feels refreshing not to have to chase after the thoughts and the associations, sort of like watching some kids play a game and you can enjoy it, but you don't have to join in.
Okay. So I lost a little bit of the first part of that, but you're basically saying it's kind of refreshing because you don't, you're it's yeah, you can enjoy it from a distance. Distance is not quite the right word, but that's basically your is that right? Yes. Okay. Okay, well, I'm going to make a point because actually I think it's important, but I definitely want to hear from other people. Okay, and it's more in the direction of what David just typed. David says, I felt an opening, expansive, freeing newness, which I like. Thank you. Yeah, the point I want to make is that when you say, oh, I'm not going to look at the content of my experience, I'm going to focus on the awareness that the moment carries, that's the instruction. There's a very strong tendency, because this is how we always see things, to split things up in terms of the one who knows and what's known. And you assign awareness to the one who knows. Right? And so it seems as though you're kind of turning away from the content of experience, to the experiencing and therefore the experiencer. And that's not right. That's not built in. That's one of those presupposed one of these presuppositions that we prefer because it helps sustain our usual picture of the self at the center of experience. But what I was noticing in doing the practice, and it seems like it was worth pointing out, is that the quality of awareness is inseparable from the quality of the experience, the quality of the content of the experience. If the awareness is somehow deeper or more alive, what did David say here? Is more opening, expansive, freeing, and new. That means the experience itself. is more freeing and new. And one of the reasons I started reflecting on that, and of course I'm just sharing a reflection with you, is that I started thinking, well, isn't it a little boring to just look at the awareness and not the content? It's like the image that came to mind was if you have a movie projector and you only look at the light that's being projected and not the images on the screen, that gets kind of boring because it's just the same light again and again and again and again. But what I realized once I asked myself that question was what I was just trying to communicate, is that there is a kind of an aliveness and openness, and David's set of terms there is very nice. In the experience that is the awareness. So, Tina, I'm looking at the chat now. Tina agrees with David, and also says there is a sense of things to be aware of. Now, I'm not sure, Tina, if you mean a lot of different things or a kind of an intensity within what it is that you're aware of. And then Shruti,
Nothing
excuse me.
particular.
Say that again.
Particular, but just so it was like chaos, but not chaos.
Okay. Well, that's a direction to go in. Okay, I want to look at Shruti's comment here. She says, I felt as though I was surrendering to experience and moving away from constructs, from labels and symbols. And that I think is very consistent with what I was pointing to. So I think that's a good place to stop for today. That's a really great thing to explore, the relationship between the quality of awareness and the quality of experiencing, and how that can counter, as Rinpoche says, this ordinary pattern of the mind, which leads us in the direction then of this kind of restlessness, tension, fear, things that don't seem all that promising or enjoyable. So we'll go on with that. We have another page or page and a half or so to work with, but I would suggest that you continue to work with that first sentence. You're welcome to read further, but with the first sentence of exercise one, the quality of awareness as each new moment arises.